We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome to Who's Counting, the podcast of the Election Integrity Network, which is a network of the Conservative Partnership Institute. We talk about all things elections, how elections are supposed to run, how sometimes they don't run the way they're supposed to, and what we as citizens in America can do to make sure our elections are honest, that they're conducted in accordance with law, and that we can fix the things that we see that are broken and perhaps make sure that those who are administering elections do so exactly in accordance with the law. We are very fortunate today to have a person who I believe is truly an American heroine. She is State Senate President Karen Fan from Arizona, who stepped up and was the person who ran the program through the We're very blessed to have with us today a woman who I believe is a true American heroine, State Senate President from Arizona, Karen Fan. Karen Fan is the woman who stood up against all odds and led the Senate of the state of Arizona to conduct and oversee an audit of Maricopa County's general election in 2020. And she's here today to discuss with us what she did, what they found, and what's being done to correct problems that may have been identified. So, Senator Fan, thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to join us and those of us who care about election integrity. Welcome.
Thanks, Cleta. Glad to be here.
I want to start, Senator, with just having you introduce yourself to our audience. A little bit about, you have such an interesting story. And tell us a little bit about where you're from. I love the story about your business. I think our listeners and viewers would really like to know more about you. So talk a little bit about how you got into business and then into politics.
I'll try and make it brief. I was raised in Prescott, Arizona most of my life. Went away for a few years. Worked for the airlines for 10 years and then came back to Prescott and started my business with $500 out of my house. And 37 years later now, I just sold it last March. We are the largest guardrail contracting company in the state of Arizona. So yes, I am a highway contractor. And it's been a great opportunity. It's been a great woman-owned business. Politics, I never thought I would be involved with politics, but as it ended up, I had suggested to my assistants at one point, maybe I'll volunteer for a board, board of zoning or parks and recs or something. And while I was away on a ski trip, one of the currently newly elected council people for the city of Prescott quit, and they put my name in along with 32 other people. And that's what started my career. Is I was appointed to that position. I served there as the vice mayor of Prescott, then moved to Chino Valley. Same thing happened a few years later. They came to me and said, would you please just fill in? We've got a Chino Valley council person that had to leave because of health reasons. And so I did, ended up being the three-term mayor there, and then thought I was done with politics until they talked me into coming down here to the Capitol, the state Capitol. So I've served three terms over in the House, and I'm in my third term in the Senate right now and serving as Senate president.
That is quite an amazing story. It's really, I love these stories of people who started out in business and then slowly made their way into politics. And you've been very successful, and you are the Senate president. And you are also, I think this year, the chairman of ALEC, is that right? The American Legislative Exchange Council, you're the national chairman?
I am, and that's a huge honor, and it's a big responsibility, and I hope to be able to fill those great big shoes that Stuart left last month for me. So we'll move forward, and I hope I'll do as good a job as he did.
Well, you'll do a wonderful job. I know everyone is really looking forward to your service as national chair of ALEC. So let's go back to the spring of 2021, a year ago. Tell us how the idea for conducting an audit originated. And what was it that about all of that that got you to decide that you really needed to lead the Senate to decide to do an audit?
Thanks, Cleta. And I'm going to take you back a little further than that. So let's go back to November of 2020. Okay. It was very apparent the very first week, right after Tuesday, the election day, it was very apparent that there were going to be issues. A lot of constituents were sending us emails already, calling us saying that, you know, things that they had observed, you know, the election polls handing out Sharpie pens, which we've never done before. And in fact, we were told specifically, do not use Sharpie pens. People that we said, you know, they saw people coming in with large handfuls of ballots, which we now call ballot harvesting. And the list just went on and on and on. And so that was the premise of why we started this. I called all five of the Board of Supervisors, Maricopa Supervisors, and I asked them, I said, you guys, we need to do a bigger audit because this minimum audit is just not going to fly right now. There are way too many questions. The constituents need answers. And rightly so, there were, you know, and there's some ones out there that there was bamboo ballots, ballots flown in from China. I mean, there was a lot of interesting things that were out there. And my goal was, I said, let's do an audit to answer their questions. If it's not true, let's tell them it's not true and show them why it's not true. But if in fact we uncover that there were problems, that we weren't following our laws and our statutes the way we should have been, that everything wasn't being done the way it's prescribed in law, then we need to fix that. We need to find out why it happened, how can we prevent it from happening again? And does that mean that we need to make new laws? Now, remember, the job of the Senate, of any legislative body, is to write laws and make sure that they are working. That's what gave us the authority and the ability to be able to subpoena all of the ballots and the information that we needed so that we can do this audit to ascertain what were the problems to help with this. As far as enforcement, that's the Attorney General's office. It's his job to enforce. So even though some people were a little mad at me that I didn't go and arrest the Board of Supervisors because they were withholding evidence, that there's very limited amounts of what we can do. The Attorney General handles the enforcement on many of those issues. So they-
let me ask you a question, because once you decided to do the audit and you said you talked to the Board of Supervisors. It's a 5-member board. How many are Republicans? How many are Democrats?
4 Republicans, 1 Democrat. And the Republicans have, some of them have been my friends for 20 and 30 years.
And so when you said to them, things in Maricopa County look like they might have some problems, what was their reaction initially?
Initially, they said, we're with you, Karen. You're right. We're hearing the same things. We think this is a good idea. So they were all on board. Then there were a few lawsuits filed by our AZGOP chairperson. There were a few lawsuits filed by people from out of state. So that kind of held it up for a month because they did not want to do anything while those lawsuits were being decided on, of which they were all dismissed because the lawsuits claimed that there was fraud. Well, there was no proof of fraud.
Right.
And it was, quite honestly, I thought it was premature that people were filing lawsuits, but that delayed it for a month. So I called them back up and I said, okay, the lawsuits are over. Let's get this done. Let's answer these questions. And at that point, they went into an executive session and then came out and said, nope, we're not doing it. In fact, they sued us to stop us from trying to get the ballots and the information. Now, I don't know what was said in that executive session, but my suspicion is that their attorney said, you know full well that this election probably wasn't perfect. Doesn't mean there was necessarily fraud or somebody was purposely doing it, but we know that Adrian Fontes, who was the recorder, we had serious problems with him in 18. We already had problems with him in 20 before the 2020 general election. And I suspect, just my opinion, I wasn't in that executive meeting, but I expect that's what happened, is the attorneys advised him not to do it.
And so was he, this person you were just talking about, what is he, the supervisor of elections? and he reports to the Board of Supervisors?
He is. He was a duly elected. The recorder of Maricopa County. He is a Democrat, and he lost his bid. He was up for election in 2020. And because of all the problems they had, there was a Republican recorder that ended up beating him. And so he's no longer there. Ironically, the same guy is now running for Secretary of State, which kind of scares the bejeebers out of us.
Oh my gosh. The person who screwed up the 2020 election and the 2018 election in Maricopa County now wants to be the Secretary of State. That is a little scary.
It's real scary. So we prevailed in court to get all this information, and that's what started the audit in April. We thought it was only going to take about 60 days, but it definitely took longer. Part of the reason was because we did have information that was being withheld from us. We were constantly having to go back.
By whom? Who was withholding information?
Maricopa County supervisors.
So they didn't cooperate.
No, they only turned over what they absolutely had to. In fact, Cleta, let me say this. We had an interim hearing in July with the auditors, and I asked, can you give us an update? What's taking so long? We should have been done by now. One of the statements during that interim hearing is they said that there were large files that had been deleted off of the ESS servers, right?
And the ESS servers are your voting systems.
That is correct. And right off the bat, Maricopa County, now they had already set up a Twitter page, a website, everything else. And every time we said anything, they came back and said, oh, that's not true. You guys are idiots. You don't know what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. So when Doug and Ben testified that there was files missing, they immediately came back and said, no, there's no files. You just don't know where you're looking. You're lying. You don't know what you're doing. And these are the things. And then, of course, we have a very liberal newspaper here in the Phoenix area who from day one said, you know, started calling it a fraud. It started before we hired auditors, before we did anything. They hate Trump so badly. They really dislike a lot of Republicans.
I remember when that was a very good conservative newspaper, but now it's owned by the Gannett chain, isn't it? And they're totally left wing.
That is exactly correct. Yeah. So, you know, they still aren't providing all the information or all the facts to the public, which is very disconcerting. But to my point, the Republic just kept siding in. So the only narrative that most of the public was getting, and then of course we had MSNBC and CNN and everybody else doing their thing. But the only thing that the constituents and the public, the national public, were hearing were from the liberal media and not hearing the other. And so let me just make this point. What's really interesting is on October 7th, there was a congressional hearing that was called by one of the Democratic members, and Congressman Andy Biggs, who is our congressman here, was on that committee. And the reason that she called this was to try to further debunk and throw despair on our election. And Ken Bennett, who was a past Secretary of State who helped work on the audit with me, he testified about the chain of custody problems, ballots that were not duplicate ballots that were not processed properly, to the extent that on the outside of the box, it said it was duplicate, but the ballots inside had no markings whatsoever to identify that they were duplicates like they're supposed to. So we can't tell you whether they were or not. And then the Board of Supervisors said, oh, everything was fine. There was nothing wrong. Andy Biggs, Congressman Biggs, says, well, I happen to have a document right here in front of me that absolutely proves that there were large files deleted off the ESS servers the day before you had to turn the machines and the ballots over to the Senate. Would you like to respond to that? Supervisors said, well, yeah, we did. They admitted under oath that they had deleted those files. And then they came back and said, well, we didn't actually delete them. We actually just, we archived them because we had to make room on the servers for an upcoming spring election. Congressman Biggs says, well, that doesn't explain why the 2018 election stuff was on there and you felt you had to delete 2020 information. But he said, but I'll give you that. He said, so you've got it backed up. You did it the day before you were supposed to turn it over to the Senate. Did you provide the Senate with a copy of those backed up files? And they said, no. And he said, why not? He said, because they didn't subpoena those from us. So this is what we have been dealing with. I'm just giving you a small flavor of all the stuff that we've been dealing with.
Well, they seem to have fought you every step of the way. And yet, despite that, and anyone who reads the report, I mean, I'm looking at a page five of the report that was issued in September of last year, and it has 13 different categories of votes that were identified, and then the report goes on and explains each of these findings, but with the realization that the margin of difference between President Biden and President Trump was 10,457. So just let's round it up, 10,500 ballots. That the first finding is that there were mail-in ballots voted from a prior address, which is illegal under Arizona law. There were 23,344 of those. More ballots returned by a voter than had been sent to the voter, 9,041 votes. Voters that potentially voted in multiple counties, 5,295. Official results that do not match who voted, because if you looked at the registration and who voted and the numbers, 3,432 of those. I mean, it goes on and on. But votes counted in excess of voters who voted, 1,551 more votes than the number of people shown in the records as having voted. I mean, it potentially 282 deceased voters, mail-in ballots received by Maricopa County with no record that they'd been sent out, 397. Ballots that were returned that were not in the final having voted file, 430 of those. I mean, it is shocking to me that the supervisors or the media could claim that there was nothing in this audit report. I find that there are pretty startling findings in this report.
And Cleta, we have turned all of this information over to our Attorney General's office. And he has an election integrity unit, and they have been working on this since September 25th, the day after we turned it over to them. And they are interviewing people. They've done numerous, numerous interviews. They are verifying this information. And we are even constantly giving them new information. We had someone in my office here on Monday. We're working on a presentation that deals with chain of custody. An amazing report done. And we had them sit down with our Attorney General's office and give their presentation to them and walk them through all of their data. So the Attorney General's is working on that right now as we speak. And as soon as that's verified, we want to get that information out to the public as well.
So that report is not ready yet to be released, no. The one on chain of custody. Talking about chain of custody, can you explain what that means?
Yeah, chain of custody means verifying and validating exactly where the ballots are from the minute that they are printed and to when they go through the system, they get to your house, you either bring it back to a voting place or you go to the polls or you vote or you mail it back. All of that has to be accounted and has to have a chain. So you know exactly who was touching it at what time and follow it all the way through. And we know for a fact that there were from these reports, you can see the chain of custody reports, there are blank lines where people never even signed off on it. So you have no idea how many ballots they had, where they were, how long they had them for. We just found out on Monday, I did not know this till just Monday, is that literally, and we got this from somebody that works at the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, that all of those ballots that were mailed out, that never should have been mailed out to begin with because people don't live there anymore, that were mailed out. And the ones that actually were returned back to the post office was nobody here at this address, the honest people that turned them back. Do you know that Maricopa County told the post office, oh, we don't want them back. You just get rid of them.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. I mean, literally And then when we ask about all of these people that are still on where ballots went out to them, the current recorder says, well, it's not my fault. You know, you're supposed to notify us when we move. So it's not our fault if you don't notify.
Oh, my gosh. Nobody remembers to do that.
Of course. And so why wouldn't you want those ballots back that were returned and use those as the verification of going through your voter rolls and start getting rid of the people that you know are not there anymore because it came back undeliverable?
You know, it's interesting because I've been working with some people in Florida because they've got legislation moving through the Florida legislature as we speak on some changes in the election code. And I sent some language, I should send it to you, that sets forth and the post office refers to any mail that's sent by an election office to a voter. That's defined in the postal code as official election mail. And so I suggested some language for how, under Florida law, they could have essentially a chain of custody, but also get reports. You know, the post office has 10 categories for undeliverable mail, and they have that information. So when they can't deliver a piece of mail, the post office will denote in their records, was it a commercial address? Was it a vacant lot? Had the person moved? The person moved out of state? I don't even know what the 10 categories are, 12 categories. But that information should be coming back to the election offices, and it should be public record. So I think that I'll send you that. I think that there's some value. The other thing is making sure that when the election office sends official election mail, that needs to be denoted and sent non-forwardable. But there are some things we have learned over the last year that maybe need to be tightened up that we hadn't realized were not being tightened up.
Yeah.
But that's crazy. Yeah. That's just crazy.
And the recorder, when asked about that, the recorder said, we got the barcodes off of, you know, from the post office, so we can go off the barcodes. And I, you know, my comment was, is you're missing the whole point. You had thousands of thousands that technically were still live ballots. Anybody, if that post office left them laying around, I mean, I don't know what the post office does with this mail. Do they literally shred it? Do they burn it? Do they just take them and throw them out in a bin? I don't even know. But the reality is that they were still live ballots.
That's right.
That anybody could have gotten their hands on, opened them up, voted with them, and went and turned them in or put them in an envelope and turned them in at the vote center. So they missed the whole point of
There does not seem to be a sense of concern or urgency on the part of the recorder's office.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing. It sure is.
So that chain of custody report was delivered. You met with people on Monday, and that's been presented also to the Attorney General. So we're awaiting some action or response from the Attorney General's office about all these irregularities and anomalies that were discovered by the audit. I think that it's pretty remarkable that you were able to do the work you were able to do with zero cooperation from the supervisors. Not only failure to cooperate, but actually obstruction. That should be a felony. They shouldn't be allowed to refuse to cooperate with a court-ordered audit.
Yeah, it is frustrating. And the fact that four of them were Republicans and my friends made it even more frustrating. Needless to say, I don't think we're much friends anymore because I didn't appreciate being lied to and the way that they have treated the Senate and the way that they've treated the constituents. It's just, in my book, unacceptable. And I'm sorry to say that about my friends. It really is.
Well, this rises above friendships and rises above colleagues because this has to do with the most fundamental right to vote in our country. And I think every American treasures that right to vote. And it's hard to fathom that you would have Republicans who would fight so hard to keep the truth from coming out. There's another aspect of that I had read about, and I was curious about the status of it. And that had to do with the fact that, you know, and there are a lot of people who worry about the voting machines and whether or not they were connected to the internet. And there's a lot of suspicion about that all over the country. And so one of the things that your audit was looking at, and as I understood it, that the court had ordered turned over to the auditors were the routers and that have to do with the voting systems. Can you explain, because I'm very non-technology oriented, can you explain what technology and technology records you were supposed to receive and what's happened with that?
Thanks, Cleta. Yeah, part of that was the routers and the Splunk logs. They were all part of the original subpoenas.
Which you're now going to have to tell everybody what routers and Splunk logs are.
Well, you know, Splunk logs record the actions of the computers and things that do that. And I'm not a real tech savvy person, so I can't even go into full details on that one. I do know more about the routers because that's something that we have in our homes. Okay. Routers are like a mail delivery system for emails and data. And all it is you are routing data. So for example, emails, those are IP addresses, right? We've all heard of that. Mm-hmm. And it's literally, they are routing millions and millions of documents and data back and forth all the time. And the reason why we wanted to see that, because that will show if was any connection outside to the internet, and if there was any data that came in that affected the election departments, i.e. information that was fed in there. And Maricopa County completely would not turn those over to us. And their claim on that one was, there's some sensitive information that could be exposed that could harm our deputy sheriffs here, private information, and we don't want to do it. And I'm like going, okay, wait a minute. These are, as I said, millions and millions of all these departments and the elections and the sheriffs and everybody sharing this router. So you would have to be some pretty amazing black hat to be able to even identify an IP address belonging to a deputy sheriff about what he's having for dinner that night amongst tens of millions of documents, right? So that was all wet. And then we also said, so if it's that sensitive, why are they sharing the router with the elections department and everybody else if you're that worried about it? Never did get an answer on that one, but that was their flimsy excuse why we couldn't have it. Again, what are they hiding? So what we finally negotiated on, because I don't give up, I do not give up easily. So finally, what we negotiated on is they appointed a special master. It's what they called. It's Congressman John Shattuck. He is a retired congressman. I know him well. He's a good, honest man.
Republican. I know him too. He's terrific.
He is. And so he is the go-between. So he has selected three IT, with our approval, we all okayed it, three IT experts. Our auditors have submitted a whole plethora of questions. And so he is working with the IT experts to get all of those questions answered. And we hope to have them back by the end of this month, like by the end of February. And so,
has the county finally turned over the technology, the routers and the Splunk logs to him and his technology team?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Because the last I'd heard, which is admittedly a couple months ago or several months ago, they still had not turned all that over to him.
Yeah. And part of the reason why we agreed to that was on September, just before we did the full audit, Maricopa County, well, we had this Katie Hobbs, Secretary of State, who we have serious problems with as well. She had put something out there that said that because of the audit and because the Senate had requested this information, that she couldn't guarantee that the machines hadn't been tampered with, which is totally ridiculous.
Never had access to the machine. Access to none of the technology.
It is so crazy. And we can go into a lot of in-depth, but we don't have enough time for all of it. But she literally said, so Maricopa County immediately ran out and bought a bunch of new machines and sent me a letter, i.e. a bill, that said you will be expected to pay for this $2.8 million of election equipment, new machines, and this and that and the other. And I responded back and said, you know, take your best shot on it, because Secretary of State Hobbs didn't even follow her own rules and regulations about how you decertify machines or uncertified machines.
Right.
So I said, she didn't even follow procedures. So you're not getting a dime out of us, not the taxpayers, not the Senate. But what they did said, okay, we will drop the lawsuit and we will give you access to the Splunk logs in and the routers, but we want to do it through the special master. And I said, I'm fine with that. Why didn't you suggest that 6 months ago? But
right.
So that's how we got to that point.
Well, you also had, I'm going to ask you one more question about another segment of your audit. And that was the work that Dr. Shiva did in terms of reviewing the envelopes that the carriers for the mail ballots. And that also has, he found a lot of very strange findings and anomalies and things that did not comport with law. Can you talk about what he found?
Absolutely. And as a fact, we're still working with him. Dr. Good. Shiva is amazing. Once again, the liberal media here, totally, the minute they heard that he was even looking at the stuff, helping us to verify this information, they trashed him. They have ruined so many people's. And, you know, the fact that he's got like 3 doctorates degree from MIT, everything he does goes through peer reviews. And even the stuff we're working on right now with him is going through peer reviews with scholars at Stanford and MIT, everyone else. But no, the public doesn't get to hear that part about how great he is. But yes, what we found, what his initial analysis that he's doing, and we're actually perfecting this even more, is the number of envelopes that came through that had 0 signature on them whatsoever. And then there were many ones that had like scribble signatures. When the law specifically says you must sign that ballot, you must make sure that it's verified, and you're supposed to do some sort of a signature check to make sure that it kind of looks like the person's signature. But we have affidavits and testimony from people that worked at the polling centers that signed documents that said, we were specifically told, we're so far behind, don't even bother to check the signatures, just run them through. So that is all part of that. And the Attorney General has all of that information as well. And he's verifying that.
Well, you know, I was reading, I read his report and I listened to his presentation to the Senate, and he goes through and identifies that there were duplicates. There are all of these envelopes that were denoted by the election workers, verified and approved, and yet there was no signature. And the law requires a signature. And then he documents each and every one of those. One of the things that it was very interesting to me, because I was in Georgia post-election, and the same thing happened in Georgia that happened in Maricopa County, which is that the number of ballots that were that voted by mail increased dramatically. And so one would think that both the number and percentage of rejected ballots because of faulty signatures would also be increased proportionately. And instead, the opposite happened. The more absentee ballots, the fewer rejections. And I know that in Georgia, that they were instructed by because of the Secretary of State and because it entered into this agreement with Stacey Abrams, and having ACLU monitors in the offices, that they didn't do any signature matching. And there were 69 counties in Georgia that had 0 signature rejected. So I'm looking at this, and it seems to me that it is, I think that Dr. Shiva is brilliant and the things that he's done using technology and scientific methods to address this. It wasn't just people eyeballing it, but his methodology is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, he is an amazing person. And you know, what's really sad, Cleta, is how this has become so political, because it never should have been political. This is about our most sacred thing, is our right as American citizens to vote, or the citizens of any other country. Right. And it should never be political. It should never be a Democrat, Republican, independent issue. It should be every one of us needs to go to that poll and understand that our vote counts, that only legal votes are being counted, and everybody's following the laws. That's all it's ever been about. And it's really a shame that the liberal media has taken this on as trying to say it's voter suppression, or since when breaking the laws is voter suppression? I mean,
exactly. I think since 2020.
It is so crazy. And I've had so many people say, gee, are you sorry you did this? You put on this audit because look at what a stir it made. And I said, no, I would do it all over again, because if anything, what it has proven is that we can do better. And number two, my only regret is I wish I would have done it in 16, because in 16, President Trump won. And he won by a much bigger margin. But guess what? It was the Democrats. It was the Elizabeth Warrens. And it was the Bernie Sanders and everybody else that was out there saying, oh, we have problems with our elections, that there is the counts weren't right. The machines weren't working. I mean, testimony after testimony on the Hill from Democrats saying how they thought there were serious problems with the elections. Dang, I wish we would have done this in the 16 election, because guess what? The media would have been all on board with this, and we would have had their support instead of me taking all the arrows and darts for it. But it is what it is.
Well, I want to tell you, there are many of us all over the country who are so grateful to you for doing it, because it has really documented issues and problems. And I know that one of the caused the judge to grant and enforce the subpoenas that you had issued from the Senate was that, as you had mentioned earlier, you argued to the court, we need to know these things that for purposes of enacting legislation. If there are problems that we need to fix in the law, we need to know these things. So my question is, what is happening, if anything, with regard to proposals in this legislative session to address any of the specific things that were identified in the audit?
Actually, somebody told me they counted there's 74 election-related bills that were dropped in just the Senate alone.
Oh, wow.
And probably an equal amount over in the House, which I haven't even seen yet. Some of them are pretty out there. Some of them are calling with doing completely away with mail-in ballots. That's not going to go anywhere. Too many people rely on mail-in ballots, particularly with our older citizens. They cannot stand in line for hours on end. However, if we were following the laws and the rules on mail-in ballots, they wouldn't have been a problem. They're only a problem because we're ignoring our laws. So we need to make sure that that's fixed and cleaned out and hold people accountable for that. We want voter ID. I don't know at what point somebody decided that voter ID was voter suppression. That is ridiculous. We all know that you need a voter, or you need an identification to cash a check. Buy a cocktail. They wanted to see my driver's license to go get a vaccine. Now, here we are all being mandated to have
COVID. I had to show my driver's license.
And we had to show our driver's license to get the vaccine. So you tell me why it's voter suppression to ask for ID to make sure that this is truly you that is getting your ballot and mailing it in or putting it in. So those are some of the things that we're just trying to, the chain of custody, we're making improvements on that, on the form, so that they can adequately be able to sign off and account for where those ballots every time, and addressing those issues like what we said. Apparently the post office was sitting on tens of thousands of ballots that were sent back in. I don't even know the exact number, to be honest with you. And I don't even know what happened to those ballots, other than Maricopa County said, I don't want them back. So there are all those kind of issues that we are dealing with. And more importantly, one of the things that we have done on our caucus bill is we are asking for audits for every election.
Good.
Real audits, not
these phony risk limiting audits.
Correct. These are going to be from our Auditor General. Our Auditor General is nonpartisan, and what they do is they audit every one of our departments, our school systems, everything, anything that has to do with government, they audit. And so we've got legislation that will allow for the Auditor General to do, and we have different buckets, if you will, as to how that will happen and which counties do what and how often. And that is a huge piece where it is a nonpartisan audit, just like we audit everything else. So we're hoping that legislation goes through. It's huge.
Well, I hope that part of that proposal is that the agencies and the actors will be required by law to cooperate or face penalties. I think that they should be held accountable for cooperating with the auditors, but just like they would if they, in any agency, you would hold them in contempt or put them in jail or something, fine them if they don't turn over the necessary, retain the documents, make them available, and cooperate with the auditors. That seems to, I hope that that's in your proposal.
We are tightening up all of that stuff as well, particularly for the fact that now that it's with the Auditor General, then it's going to be really different. This is like them auditing a school district and the school superintendent says, no, I'm not going to show you my books.
Right.
That probably wouldn't happen. You know, it's right. Not going to go over real well, especially when it comes to funding, because they just say, fine, then we're not giving you any money until you turn the books over. So we know that you're doing things right.
Well, you know, I think that's really important. And I do hope that you're able to get this bill passed. And there's always more to do. I mean, we're always learning more. I'll send you my language about the post office and the interrelation between the post office and the election offices, because it's just something that I began to realize through the Virginia election last year. We asked for a meeting with some postal authorities, and we asked for it in October, finally got it in January. But interestingly, we learned a lot about how that works behind the scenes. I'd be happy to share that with you and send you some of this language. But I think that we need to tighten up the way in which election offices send out election mail and the information that comes back from the post office. They need to be talking to each other, and those should be public records, and those should, we should use that because the post office, I mean, the election offices pay a lot of money to send election mail. And we should reap the benefit of that for purposes of cleaning the voter rolls.
That's exactly right.
But, well, I, you know, you have just been wonderful. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you want to make sure that everybody knows you're doing in Arizona or with Alec?
Well, one thing that's, well, there's a lot of great things about Alec. Of course, I love being a part of Alec, and Lisa Nelson, who's our, you know, CEO, is just like
she's the most fabulous
woman in the whole world. She's awesome.
She is.
But a good thing about these audits is not only with Alec, but other organizations, we've now brought this to out in the sunlight that we can do better. And so it's going to be great to be able to talk with our colleagues from other states, because we know this isn't an Arizona issue. This is a nationwide issue. And I'm so excited to wait for meeting with all of our colleagues again to sit down and say, what are you doing in your state? What did you do? It's just amazing the things that we are learning out of this. Mm-hmm. And if we can work together as teams so that we know that every single state has good, secure election systems, and we're all working together as a team to make sure that they are that way. So It's kind of exciting. Despite the controversy, it's kind of exciting.
Well, that's really how I feel about it, Senator. I mean, I have my life has changed in the last year, resigning my partnership of 20 years at my law firm and now working full time in election integrity. But I get a lot of grief from the media, the liberal media and the left. But to me, I feel as though, you know, I didn't serve in the military. And I feel like this is my military. So this is my quasi-military service. I feel as though what you're doing, and hopefully the work that we're doing with the Election Integrity Network, I really do feel as though it's my patriotic duty. And I know that that's how you feel. I heard you describe early on why you thought that it was important to do the audit right at the very beginning. I think it was last April or May. And you said something I've remembered all year, which is that because of all the questions, because of the majority of the Arizona voters did not believe or trust in the outcome of the election, and that they didn't trust the election results, that you felt it was imperative that people in leadership in the state needed to step up and get to the bottom of it, find out if there were problems, identify those and fix it. And I thought that's such a simple I was just so impressed with that, because it's absolutely right. And I just have never understood, like you say, why there's been so much resistance and backlash, but you have sustained a lot of attacks. And I just want you to know that you're in our prayers, and you've been a true heroine, and appreciate so much that you were willing, you had the courage to do what you've done. So thank you. On behalf of everybody who cares about honest elections, thank you, Senator Karen Fann.
Thank you, Cleta. And remember, I'm just one person. I have an amazing Senate members here that we're all part of that as well. Our staff has really had to go through a lot of heartache themselves. So,
I'm so glad you said that, because that's true. It required a vote, and you had to have, you couldn't just order it. It did take the Senate a majority to be able to do that. So please convey our thanks to all of them.
Thank you, Ada.
Your staff. Thank you for everything. And thank you so much to our audience for joining us to learn about elections and election integrity. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, to Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, and share it with your friends, because this is where you can come to learn facts about what happened in 2020, and more importantly, what we as citizens can do to make sure that our elections in America are honest, that they're carried out in accordance with law, and that we're not going to be bullied by the liberal media or the crazy leftists who want to hide this whole subject buried in the ground, and never have to hear of it. We want to talk about it, and we're going to talk about it. And if you want to hear about it, come to Who's County. So that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for joining us. And thanks again to the Honorable Senate President of Arizona, Karen Fan. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter. Become part of the Election Integrity Network.